Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Remember what Chair Jay Powell said on Wednesday? He said it several times.
It was only a couple days ago. I remember this.
Because he said it. I feel like, I don't even know, I lost count, but how good our economy is. And he said, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, we certainly got a lot more evidence of that today in this morning's monthly jobs report. Again, Carol, I'll use this word one more time, a blockbuster one. That's turning that slowdown narrative kind of on its head.
Yeah, let's get to just a reminder of the numbers, if you missed it perhaps this morning. U.S. companies boosted payrolls in January by 353,000. Folks, that's the most in a year. December's hiring figure also received a hefty upward revision. So we're talking about 2 months of some strong gains. Taken together, the numbers suggest a reacceleration that is likely to delay any rate cuts for the time being. And then we got another reading.
Yeah, U.S. consumer sentiment surging in January from a month earlier by the most in years as retreating inflation helped bolster views about the economy and household finances.
All right, so that's your setup. Let's get to the interview on this Jobs Friday. With us, Bloomberg News International Economics and Policy Correspondent Michael McKee. He's on Zoom in New York City. He's had a long day, a busy day. Here in studio, busy week for him as well. Here in studio, BNP Paribas Senior U.S. Economist Yelena Shaletjeva. I'm assuming her week was a little busy with all of the flow. Mike, let's start with you. As the data came down initially, what was your first thought?
I think that I echoed Mohamed El Arian in saying, wow, this was not expected. We had seen the wide range of estimates from 120,000 to 300,000 going into this, and we had a number that was way above even the highest consensus number. And then we saw that December had been revised up and unemployment didn't change. And then we had a very strong average hourly earnings, which basically is because the weather was bad in January. I can explain that. But the numbers themselves were really good. And the more you look into it, the better they look, basically. I told somebody earlier, you know, we cynical reporters are always looking for the bad thing. Yeah. And I really couldn't find a whole lot.
Yelena, I was going to ask you, Mike, if you found anything bad, but you just answered the question. Yelena, did you find anything there wasn't to love in this report?
I totally didn't. And even the decline in hours worked was probably due to the weather and is expected to rebound next month.
Okay. So we know the White House loves this report. Yelena, does Fed Chair Jay Powell love this report?
I think that really supports his narrative that we heard at the last FOMC meeting, that they will not have any significant confidence that they will need to cut rates anytime soon. So our own expectation is for May, and I think today's data just basically was the last nail in the coffin of the recession fears. You know, we were guilty ourselves. We were thinking maybe we will see a downturn. That was our thinking last year, but we haven't seen momentum in the economy, haven't seen GDP numbers, haven't seen retail sales numbers, and now this payrolls report. It's really a good economy, and the Fed doesn't need to rush.
Yeah, and listen, Jay Powell said on Wednesday, right, he doesn't want to necessarily see the jobs market come undone. Mike, having said that, I do want to ask you about if there were any caveats in this number that we need to be smart about, because I feel like we talked with members of our team in the lead up and they said there could be some nuances to this data set.
Well, the one big nuance was the one Yelena mentioned, which was the fact that average hours went down, and that was likely due to weather, People couldn't put in as many hours because we had some big storms during the month of January. And then that depressed the, actually didn't depress, it increased average hourly earnings. So they came in a little hot. The Fed would normally be worried about that, but it is probably, as Yelena said, a one-off, and that'll go away in February. So that was the caveat a lot of people were looking for. The other was the possibility that we would have unusual seasonal effects, mm-hmm. which maybe we had in December, but it doesn't look like there was anything particularly unusual in January. Normally, you lose jobs in January, and on a non-seasonally adjusted basis, we lost jobs. But the seasonal adjustment in this case pushed them quite high. But this has happened in the last 4 years since the pandemic, where you get this big jump in January and then sort of slides down in February.
All right. So Tim is really smart about always pointing this out. We get some like strong labor report from the government or otherwise. And then he's like, well, how do you make sense, Yelena, of all of the headlines we keep getting on job cuts this week alone or over the last couple of weeks, Microsoft, Salesforce, UPS, banks cutting jobs. How do you square those headlines with a report like we got this morning?
Look, it could be a timing issue, so that could still be coming, but at the same time, it could be a lot of hiring going on, and they just, you know, it's a net number, so we may see some layoffs down the road. I think the key thing that we did not discuss about the payrolls report was the breadth of job mm-hmm. gains. So it's not only happening in the big three sectors such as healthcare, leisure and hospitality, and education. It's actually spilling beyond those three sectors. So we saw gains elsewhere, and those gains for the first time in a couple of years exceeded those in those sectors that are in deficit that I mentioned. So that is a key thing for us from the jobs report, that it's broadening. The diffusion index went up as well. So that is telling us that it's not just a particular sector that is gaining. It's broadening.
Mike, when I see a report like this, jump in.
I was just going to say, Tim, I did remember one little bit of bad news when Yelena was talking about the breadth of hiring. For the first time since we started recovering from the pandemic, restaurants and bars lost workers, 2,400 workers down. That's the only negative I can think of.
That's Nobody's back at the office working. Fridays are gone in terms of going out to work.
Exactly. So, Mike, I wanted to ask, when I see a report like this, and when I see wage data like this, and then consumer sentiment numbers, a positive read coming in earlier today, I wonder if inflation is at risk of picking up again.
Well, no, I don't think so from these wage numbers, because as I pointed out, there's a reason behind it. The weather depressed hours and hours, therefore depressed it put fewer people making more money into the situation. So we'll probably see that go away. This happened in January of 2022. There was a 7/10 rise in average hourly earnings during the month, and the next month it was zero. So it'll be a give back. It doesn't look like there's any real inflationary pressure here. And certainly in the consumer sentiment numbers today, no evidence people are expecting inflation to come back.
Right.
The real question, and this is the question that the folks at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue are going to be asking, is when do people realize that Jay Powell is right, that this is a good economy, and that they're not losing ground to inflation anymore? They're making more than the level of inflation. So that's the kind of the key question going forward on a political side, is how do people experience this economy? They've got to be experiencing it better now, but that's not been totally reflected yet.
Hey, last question, 30 seconds to you, Yelena. We've got Jay Powell, Fed Chair, up on 60 Minutes this week. And what, just quickly, would you be listening out for? And you think we should all be?
I think it's going to be a broader discussion about the banking sector, about the state of the economy. There was some kind of discussion on the floor today where they're going into the number, whether it's something in the payrolls report that he needs to talk about. But it looks like it's just going to be a broader discussion ahead of the cutting cycle that he needs to clarify anything. He has an opportunity.
I'm guessing, too, he'll be asked about job security, since he's been on some people's radar again about his job going forward. Good stuff, guys. Thank you so much. Our thanks to Bloomberg News International Economics and Policy Correspondent Mike McKee. And, of course, here in studio, BNP Paribas Senior Economist Yelena Shalitova.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Listen on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
So getting back to one of our top stories, or maybe it is the top story today, is that ever-resilient, Tim, U.S. labor market.
Yeah, you know the headlines. Blockbuster monthly jobs report, women driving gains in January, stronger U.S. factory payrolls hinting at manufacturing turning a corner.
Yeah, Mike and Yelena saying almost like couldn't find anything wrong with this
Mike
report.
Had to look really, really hard to find something that wasn't so good.
And even then,
good.
He felt kind of a little, I think, desperate saying
yeah,
about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
All right, we want to get back to the labor market, the labor story here in the U.S., and another view, if you will. Back with us is Amy Glazer. She's Senior Vice President at Adecco. They are a global staffing agency, some 300 locations. She is on Zoom from Florida. Hey, Amy, good to have you back here with Tim and myself. So based on what you've been seeing from your clients about staffing needs, how surprised were you about today's blockbuster jobs report?
Everybody was just a little bit surprised at how impressive the results were, but it's not surprising at all as we continue to see employers are still hiring. It's still a candidate-driven market, 1.3 openings for every candidate out there looking. And, you know, we talked a lot about resiliency last year. I think 2024 is going to be a year of stability. And we're in for a marathon. It's not a sprint race here.
What are you hearing from your clients right now that use Adecco as a staffing firm? I mean, what are you seeing from them about areas where they can't find employees or areas where they have too many applicants?
It really varies segment by segment, geography by geography. Mm. I can tell you right now, getting ready to roll into tax season, accountants are white hot. Customer service agents continue to be ever in demand. And then healthcare is exploding and will continue over the next couple of years. The manufacturing activity has picked up, and that's where we've always struggled and seen quite a bit of a shortage, especially as it relates to that skills gap as baby boomers are retiring from that industry.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, because I think we're all trying to make sense, because there are a lot of Americans out here as we face a presidential race who don't necessarily feel so good about their lot in life. And maybe they have good reasons to say so. Maybe their skill set isn't a matchup for the jobs that are out there. What are the skills most in demand? For a long time, or I feel like in the last year, we talked a lot about AI all of a sudden. What are the skills in demand?
So very interestingly, it's actually the soft skills that matter. Can you interact with humans? Can you show empathy? Customer service skills. So it's not necessarily the hard skills that you require a diploma for. Oftentimes it's, do you have the will and the ability and desire to learn new things, to be open-minded? Employers have becoming increasingly flexible as it relates to training and upskilling, and opportunities exist. If you're a job seeker and you're having trouble, you just need to try a new avenue and put your foot out there and be willing to take some risks.
What should people be doing? I mean, what are the risks that people should be taking? What are the skills people should be learning?
I always advise people, start with an online search, talk to your friends, talk to peers. And there are so many opportunities, not only for online learning, but in-person community-based learning events, many of which are free. So do your research, do it early, and to tap in any experts that exist within your network.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Amy, and Tim and I discussed this with our own Mike McKee and Yelena Shilatyeva over at BNP Paribas about, all right, very strong monthly jobs report, revisions for December upward that show two strong months. And yet, every day we come in here and there are headlines about companies that are cutting jobs. I'm thinking about Microsoft, Salesforce, UBS. We had a segment, one of our reporters talking on air about banks cutting jobs. I don't get it. So we have that. Is that a case of that just hasn't hit in your view in terms of some of the monthly statistics? Help me understand that gap or what seems to be a gap.
December and January are always a really odd time to use as a barometer for long-term projections. There's a lot of noise due to holidays and a lot of other things going on with hiring. But I do believe that we're going to continue to see companies hiring. Although they're laying off, even the companies that are laying off are still hiring. It may just be in other areas. And as productivity continues to increase in certain sectors, other sectors are going to rise. We saw it again, hospitality and leisure. People are traveling more than ever before, and those ads are making up for some of those losses we're seeing in other services.
Are you starting to see, Amy, the impact of artificial intelligence yet from any of your clients?
It is a hot button, and it is on every single client interaction and discussion I have. we're really seeing signs of encouragement from a lot of our clients that AI is helping take the day-to-day tactical work off of their employees. So that's allowing them to spend more time upskilling, more time with candidate, client-facing activities, and doing things they really enjoy. So we're actually seeing some positive benefits out of it. Employee engagement's actually increasing, even though you might think, oh, there's this fear of folks losing their job. When you actually get down and survey and results are being noticed, it's been very positive and impactful.
I wonder if, too, you would go so far, and a lot of market watchers have come on and say, we're getting back to normal, meaning all of the unprecedented stimulus and things that impacted our world. First of all, the pandemic impacting our world, and then all of the provisions, if you will, put in place to help us through it, the world through it, certainly kind of skewed so much of what was going on, and certainly the data points. Aren't we kind of back to normal in the labor market, in your view, based on your conversations and the type of activity you're seeing with your clients?
Absolutely. You know, in my view, we're at our new normal. We talked about it for 4 years, and we talked about how the recovery wouldn't be linear, but it would be bumpy. Those bumps are starting to smooth out.
How long do you think it takes to be completely smoothed out in this actual return to normalcy to happen this year?
I think we're going to see it happen within the next couple quarters. We're looking at stable market pretty much the rest of the year. I know we do have an election coming up, which is going to be all over the news, but I think we're in, you know, stable mode
for the rest
of 2024.
Do you hear about the election at all in your work? We ask every business leader about it who comes across our desk.
Because you sound really enthusiastic.
Yeah, totally. Like a lot of people we talk to. But do you hear about it from the folks you work with at all?
Here and there, everyone's always wondering and talking about what the implications are. Luckily for my business, the world of work and matching great talent to great companies is going to exist under any administration. So it's not quite as noisy in my world, probably.
Talk a little bit more about diversity within the hiring. We have highlighted that female labor force participation rate climbed to 57.5% from 57.1%, while the male rate dropped 0.2 percentage point to 67.9%. January job gains were driven by women. The importance of diversity. Jay Powell, Fed Chair, has talked about the importance of this recovery, making sure everyone's a part of it. What did we see, or what are you seeing when it comes to hiring, that we are seeing the job gains being spread out throughout the population?
I love this topic, and I love to see that women are returning to the workforce. I think it has a lot to do with flexibility on the part of employers. They've realized through this talent race that you've got to offer flexible opportunities, whether that's part-time opportunities, weird schedules that coincide and help them allow for childcare, and now elder care has become another hot topic. So as employers have become increasingly more flexible, it's opened up the opportunity for women to return to the world of work, which is just very inspirational.
Amy, does that flexibility stay? Is that a permanent shift? Because I got to tell you, we're hearing anecdotally at this point that the era of hybrid work and working from home is kind of coming to an end at this point. I mean, many companies are requiring people to come in a majority of time. I mean, just this week after UPS said they were laying off 12,000 people, they said managers got to come back in 5 days a week now.
Well, you also have to look at flexibility, not only in terms of where you're sitting, but when you're doing the work. So we are seeing a return to the office, but we're seeing a greater increase in part-time opportunities. So think about the stay-at-home mom who can work from 9 to 3 while her child's in school and still get them on and off the bus. So you will continue to see an increase in part-time offerings and flexible scheduling.
All right. I want to be smart, though. What are we missing? What are your concerns when you look at the labor market? You're someone who obviously talks with a lot of companies. You have a lot of clients across different industries. I want to be smart here, where there's a lot of enthusiasm following a report like today. What might we be missing, or what should we be concerned about when it comes to the labor market here in the U.S.?
We still need to be concerned about the retiring workforce and the baby boomers retiring. So they're taking with them a lot of skills. You know, it's the first time in history where we've got 5 generations in the workplace. So there's a ton of different things employers are having to deal with to help navigate through those different generations and what they're looking for. So employers that are really paying attention to that are seeing great success, but the skills gap and skills-based training is going to continue to be something folks really need to keep an eye on.
So those above 65, retiring more, or are we still seeing hiring? Real quickly.
We are seeing them retire and also return at the same time. The question of the day is, are the returnees going to be able to outpace those that are retiring? And it doesn't look like that's going to be the opportunity at this time.
All right. Well, a broad overview. So appreciated. Amy Glazer, Senior Vice President at Adecco, joining us on Zoom from Florida. Interesting, though, and as we've seen, a lot of gains across many different verticals if you look at the U.S. labor market.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Listen live each weekday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
As you know, we've been talking about it. We talked about it with Mark Gurman. Apple Faithful, lining up at Apple U.S. stores today, picking up the first Vision Pro headsets, ushering in what the company calls the era of spatial computing, which makes me just want to know more about spatial computing and the potential and what it can do.
Okay, it's the first new product category for Apple since 2015. It's going to be $3,500. Well, that's how much it costs now. Melds virtual and augmented reality. It's been a relatively niche market until now. Meta Platforms has dominated the industry. 8 million units sold last year.
You know, we're an Apple household. I haven't heard my husband bring it up.
You haven't bought one of these yet?
No. Okay. We have not. We're not lined up. I don't think he did any pre-order, but who knows when I get home. We'll find out. It's a little pricey, though.
Hey, you know what? Who does have one is our next guest. Kathy Hackle is co-chief executive officer at Spatial Dynamics. This is a brand new company. It focuses on spatial computing and AI. She joins us on Zoom from Washington. The company may be new, Kathy, but you've been in this space for quite a long time studying spatial computing and the Metaverse. Good to have you with us. I saw on Twitter this morning that you have one of these Vision Pros. Looks like you're holding. Yeah, she's going to hold it up right there. There it is. Okay. Give us your first impressions right now. Give us your first impressions.
Yeah, well, very exciting day. A day in the, you know, many years in the making for a lot of us in the technology industry. There was a lot of excitement. I was actually the first person in my DC area Apple store to get the demo and to buy the Apple Vision Pro. So I was the first one to walk in, first one to walk out. Very exciting day. For those of us that are really into technology or are really into the Apple products, you know, a lot of excitement and delight and just, you know, amazing to be able to kind of use this advanced technology right now.
Well, so you bought it. Wait, have you played with it much?
Yeah, so I'm an Apple Vision Pro developer as well. So I had already demoed the device. I just couldn't speak about it publicly.
Right.
And, you know, I got to play again with it today, more on a personal fun level. So I've already gone shopping. I've done all sorts of things already with the Apple Vision Pro.
Well, so tell us about the experience for many of us who haven't done that and what you think is the market potential, the use potential.
Yeah, so the experience is very immersive. It's very intuitive, and Apple always excels at creating things that are easy for us to, you know, to learn very quickly. So the setup is very quick, very simple. I almost say it's very smooth. It's almost like butter. It's just very, very smooth to set up and very easy to use. The experience in itself, you know, there's many different apps. There's many different things you can do with it. There's shopping. There's, for example, Zillow Immersive, where you can go into these multi-million-dollar homes and kind of view these, you know, these homes in 360 and 3D in a way you couldn't do it before. You can do, you know, all sorts of things. I think the most important experience that I had was definitely spatial video, which is something that they had already demoed to a lot of media. But that experience of actually reliving your memories in 3D really was impactful. And to me, shows maybe some of the ways that people are going to use this device in the future, because it actually allows you to, you know, to connect with family in different ways.
Is that what you see being the main use case here? When we were talking about this with Meta Platforms over the last couple of years, we've talked a lot about productivity and living in the metaverse, and that's kind of gone out the window at this point. But what do you see as the main use cases here?
I think the main use cases in the interim are going to be entertainment for sure. There's a lot of entertainment apps already on it. So watching video is going to be fun. Working, the optics on this are fantastic. So I could see myself working and opening apps and email, you know, doing email quite a bit. So I think that's going to be a big use. Eventually sports and fitness. Now, right now, there's not a lot of apps for that, but I think that's always been a
big use
case
for
VR.
At this point, it's a little too heavy for sports and fitness. Mark Gurman, our senior executive, or senior tech reporter, who has one, was telling us how it could feel heavy to a lot of people at this point.
I think it could feel heavy, but if you're used to working out in VR, because, you know, you might not feel as uncomfortable with it. I definitely think entertainment. And then, like I said, spatial video, reliving those memories are going to be really exciting in using the headset. And I could definitely see a market for education and enterprise going forward. Shopping. Shopping was really fun.
All right. If you had to make a bet on this area of spatial computing versus AI, or I wonder how interchanged they are, maybe it's a stupid question. AI has a lot more market potential, or do they both?
So when you think of AI, to me, AI is a type of technology. To me, spatial computing is a domain, right? Just like mobile computing, personal computing, it's a domain that is that has many different technologies, right? So you almost have to take a step back, and spatial computing is not interchangeable with mixed reality, which is, I think, a lot of what people think. Where really what we're talking about is the next computing platform. And that computing platform is 3D-centric, and it is powered by AI, it's powered by computer vision, it's powered by extended reality and other technologies. So this is a hardware play, but there's a lot of AI already in this device that I don't think they're talking about it like that.
What do you mean there's AI in the device? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So basically, there's a lot of scanning of the physical world happening with the device and tracking. So there's a lot of computer vision, a lot of sensors already looking at the physical world and rescanning it to put that virtual content in front of you. So it's not necessarily generative AI in the sense of ChatGPT and what people think about right now, but there's computer vision and other elements of artificial intelligence already in this device. So I think that they're playing the long game here. I would even say, and this is provocative, that people think, you know, Apple's behind on AI. I think that they've actually been forward, and there's a lot of like things that have gone into this device that I think they're eventually going to engage. They're going to add more, you know, generative AI, probably another Siri in the future, and it's all going to work with the device as well.
Kathy, you know, it's been a week where we have just leaned so heavily, understandably so, because of earnings, into the big tech mega caps. So I think about our investor audience a lot when we talk about something like spatial computing, or obviously every day, or it seems like every day, about AI. What companies does our audience, or does the investing audience, kind of need to be focusing on in this environment? Because sometimes it's the big names, sometimes it's smaller players.
I would definitely say, you know, the big players like Meta and Apple, of course. I mean, Samsung obviously is going to be doing things in the market. But that's the hardware component of spatial computing, right? There's a whole software component that is Unity, for example, and game engines. And now Unity has had a bit of a terrible time. But anything related to the software, related to spatial computing, even, you know, LLMs are part of the software that we're going to be incorporating into these future devices and whatever we use after the mobile phone. And then data, there's going to be a lot of information on data and connectivity. So I don't know. For me, it's almost like asking me to bet on it's almost asking me to select a share or a stock mm-hmm. related to mobile computing. You can't. It's a whole domain, and it encompasses hardware, software, data, and connectivity. So it's really hard to just say one, to be honest.
Kathy, what's the opportunity for you and your new company? You're co-CEO at Spatial Dynamics. What's the opportunity that you see out there for a company like yours?
It's really early, right? So we're launching very, very early because we believe in what's coming. We think a lot of these companies are going to want apps in the Apple Vision Pro. Or where I think it gets interesting is when you look at maybe an iPhone 16 or a 17 or an Apple Vision Pro 2 or version 3, there's going to be more and more demand and also more devices. You already have Meta saying they're going to support spatial video. So I think a lot of companies are going to want to port their apps into spatial computing. They're going to want to create new experiences. And even the enterprise, I think, eventually is going to be really interested in kind of how they're going to be able to use spatial computing at scale.
How do you, as someone who really understands this space, spatial computing, no pun intended here, but how do you, kind of separate hype from reality?
It's very hypey right now, and I'm mm-hmm. very excited, right? So I'm living through the hype. I'm surfing on it right now. But I would say it's a long-term play, right? Like mobile computing took a while to take off. I was one of the first people that didn't have a first iPhone. I was still on my BlackBerry, right? I never thought I was going to give it up. Hmm. You know, lo and behold, now I have an iPhone. So I think it's also that. It's going to take a while. So it's not about this first device, right? Apple's game is not to sell millions of these devices right now. This is a version one, and it's going to seed the market for those spatial interfaces. Those spatial interfaces are going to be devices like the Vision Pro, but they're also cars. There's going to be phones. There's going to be all sorts of devices that are going to use spatial computing. So that's the long-term play, is thinking about this is as revolutionary as mobile computing was. And, you know, mobile computing really gave us, you know, the Ubers and the Airbnbs of today. So think about what that's going to bring in the future.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Some really cool stuff and some insight. Kathy, thank you so much. Have fun playing with it. I know you played with it before, but have fun playing with it this weekend. Kathy Hackle is co-chief executive officer at Spatial Dynamics, joining us on Zoom from Washington, D.C. I think it's interesting when we've spent so much time talking about AI that we haven't talked as much about spatial computing.
Yeah, and the two are, you know, they're related to one another. Thing, yeah, but they're intertwined for sure.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car, I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
It's the question that drives us.
You drive me crazy.
This is The Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just about 18 minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to wrap up this week. And yeah, it's going out with a bang. I mean, you heard Charlie breaking down the numbers. We're up still 1.8% on the NASDAQ. Really, the tech sector once again leading the charge here, Tim.
You know what's interesting? Not really a lot of breadth on the S&P 500. 260 stocks are higher, 242 stocks are lower.
So kind of an even split here. So disproportionately,
yeah, I'm really surprised to see that given the, I don't know, the excitement that I'm kind of like, I'm not feeling excited, but I'm sensing excitement.
Yeah, it definitely you feel it, certainly when you think about some of these big tech names. Having said that, a big reason why is some of the economic reports we got this week, and a big one this morning. Neil Dutta, I have to just share this with everybody. He's over at Renaissance Macro, sharing that strong growth in labor productivity means unit labor costs are under control, which is a good backdrop for corporate earnings. So let's see what our Drive to the Close guest has to say about that. With us is Philip Palumbo, founder, CEO, and chief investment officer at the private wealth manager Palumbo Wealth Management. They've got approximately $400 million in assets under management. He is on Zoom from Great Neck, New York. Philip, great to have you here with us. That monthly jobs report, productivity gains, how is that, in your view, a reset or recalibration, if at all, for how you think about the type of investment opportunities that you might want to position your clients in?
Yeah, first I want to say that really this market move that we've seen has been such a win for long-term investors that have been patient the past 2 years. Now, the S&P 500 is only up just about 7% cumulatively the past 2 years, and money markets pretty much perform the same. So for long-term investors, being patient, you really got rewarded. So the big question for me, Carol, is are we going to continue to make higher highs here as we're looking at the market, as we think about this year? And there are really three reasons what I'm looking at that's exciting me. Number one is earnings are going to continue to accelerate in 2024. Two, the Fed is going to cut at some point this year. And three, it's an election cycle, an election year. So those three things are really a strong recipe why the markets continue to move higher. But the key thing is that in the very short term here, I do think we are overbought. You have to be patient, look for pullbacks, and there are opportunities to do so.
All right, first up, though, the election cycle. I got to ask about this. Could be an unusual one, an interesting one, although it is expected.
Already is, I would say.
It could be and is highly expected to be a rematch of the current president, Joe Biden, and a former president, Donald Trump. There is some nervousness around the outcome and whether that creates some instability kind of in the U.S. Political scene, if you will. You think we can say, we can compare this election cycle to election cycles of the past and what it means for the markets?
I mean, I do, because, you know, there's two potential candidates, right? And we kind of understand where Trump stands as it relates to regulation, taxes, which I think taxes is really a big part of what Trump could do. Maybe just continue to keep the current tax code in place, where maybe you can see a rollback if there's a Biden if Biden's elected. I think immigration and controlling that is a positive for our economy on the Trump side of things. So I do think it's the same. It's a Republican, it's a Democrat. We both know, both I have an understanding of what they're looking to achieve if one of them are elected. So I do think it's the same. I think it's a non-issue.
Okay, what about the Fed cutting rates this year? I know this is Carol's favorite parlor game to play, but because of the hot labor data that we got earlier today, and given what we heard from Fed Chair Jay Powell earlier this week, traders are pairing their bets that the Fed's actually going to cut six times this year, and it's looking more like the 3 to 4. When do you think the Fed cuts, and do you actually care when the Fed cuts?
Yeah, listen, we're long-term investors. I mean, playing the game of when the Fed's going to cut, how much it's going to cut, it's not really a great game to build wealth over time. But to answer your question, in my view, I mean, I thought in December he was way too dovish. He realized that. He became hawkish just on Wednesday. And as a result of that, you know, the market cut back from 6 to 3. That's about right. I had a feeling that was going to happen. I thought we'd see some more volatility with markets declining as a result of that, but obviously we have not. So I just think that, you know, the economy is much stronger than investors anticipated. And as a result of that, you know, the Fed may hold off on cutting rates sooner than cutting rates longer than people are anticipating. So I see a cut right around the May period.
Yeah,
is what I'm looking at.
Well, what I want to know is what your clients are asking you about. These guys, if you're doing wealth planning, you've got a lot of private wealth management that you are obviously doing, whether it's family offices and so on and so forth, they are long-term investors, or they tend to be. So what are the investments that they most ask you about? What are the investments you most often put them in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our clients that come to us are families and individuals that built businesses and sold their business, and they're looking to really create a balanced approach, protect first, grow second. So with that type of an approach, you know, we're really well diversified. We'll balance in private real estate, private equity, emerging growth, long duration treasuries, intermediate term duration treasury, and then an equity portfolio. So we're really well diversified with a good risk adjusted return. So it's almost, I almost describe it as kind of boring, but it's what our clients want to protect their wealth in the event you get an economic shock.
What would be like a typical allocation to private equity right now?
I usually like minimum 10%. You know, historically, I always say that the best way to grow wealth over time is stocks, real estate, and private equity. Those three asset classes have proven to return somewhere north of 10% compounding over a long, long period of time. So I think in order to achieve any type of good risk-adjusted return from private equity, I think 10% minimum is a really good allocation.
How much exposure are you getting them into private credit?
Mm-hmm. So private credit, I would say same thing, 10%, 5 to 10%. I mean, I like private credit a lot. My only concern, it is a saturated market. There's a ton of money that's being thrown out there. We don't really understand what's underneath the hood. But if you stick with a really good manager, we use Ares, A-R-E-S, a great manager, has a great track record. So if you stay with the great managers out there with a proven track record that are conservative when it comes to allocating capital, you know, that's what gives us confidence in investing in that particular area.
How much cash do you have on the sidelines right now waiting for a moment to get into either the equity market or somewhere else?
You said that, cash on the sidelines.
Yeah.
So it depends on the client. If, you know, if you're a newer client, there's probably still about 20%, because I think we're a little bit overbought here. But if you're a client for a while,
20%?
Yeah. So for newer clients, let's say you started with us just, let's say, 2 weeks ago or even 2 months ago, about 20% right now is still on the sideline waiting to deploy that capital. For clients who've been with us for a while, you're at about 5 to 8%. That's down from about 30%. So we've been allocating over the past 2 to 3 months a lot into equities.
Anybody calling you up and saying, hey, where's my exposure to Meta? Where's my exposure to Amazon? Just quickly.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So yeah, we absolutely have exposure to both of those areas right now. Meta, not so much, but Amazon, we do have a nice exposure to within client portfolios.
You did see what Meta did today, did you not?
Very nice move on Meta today. They've really done a great job finally waking up to getting away from the metaverse and getting into operation control and operation cost control, which has really helped them tremendously. I mean, from that day when they announced that, the stock is just, you know, to the moon and back. So they really done a nice job. Thank God they made a transition call back back last year.
A year of efficiency sounds well. It's got to remember that people lose their jobs in all of this. So it's certainly got an individual
That's
story.
Amazing.
Yeah. Phil, hey, listen, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. MetaShare is still up about 20% today. Philip Palumbo, founder, CEO, and chief investment officer at the private wealth manager Palumbo Wealth Management, on Zoom from Great Neck, New York. Folks, we're just about 10 minutes away from the close.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.